Hello, this is Rita Schulte, and I will be reading the Friday, February 21st, 2020 News Gazette. On the front page, the big story today is the Illinois State Wrestling Tournament here in Champaign. The first article is in headline, it has a headline of "Just Getting on the Mat is a Workout." A steady stream of high schoolers marched up the ramp leading to State Farm Center's northwest entrance on Thursday morning. All 672 of them were slated to compete in the IHSA State Wrestling Tournament, but they weren't arriving more than 2 hours before the start of the Class 1A preliminaries to soak in the atmosphere. Before even considering his or her first-round matchup in the three-day showcase, the athlete must pass through a rigorous hair and skin check. Weigh-in coordinator Mike Matozzi has witnessed the health and safety measures both as a 32-year-old wrestling coach and a three-year supervisor of the process himself. "You learn a little something each time you do it, and it goes incredibly fast," Matozzi said. "When you think about it, 672 wrestlers, and we can get them through and weighed in less than half an hour. That takes some doing." Doors open to wrestlers at 10 a.m. leading up to a 10:30 call time for hair and skin checks. Participants make a short walk into the bowels of State Farm Center and hop on one of five scales being watched over by volunteers. "You have to weigh enough to qualify for the weight class that's just underneath you," Matozzi said. "So let's say you're a 113-pounder. You have to weigh enough to have qualified as a 106-pounder. Matozzi noted that come January 1st, there's a 2-pound growth allowance permitted to all competitors. Therefore, that wrestler hitting the mats at 113 can weigh anywhere between 106 and 115 pounds when the state action begins. If they're not okay, you'll see some of them running in the balconies trying to drop those last few ounces," Matozzi said. "Hopefully, it's only a few ounces." All athletes then head back toward Lou Henson Court, covered with six large wrestling mats. They must sit and wait to hear their weight class bracket announced. That's when things get interesting, especially if someone's fingernails are too long or hair too unruly. Wrestlers hold out their hands to be inspected. If their nails are deemed potentially dangerous, they're directed to a nearby garbage can and given some clippers. "There's a chance they could scratch their opponent," Matozzi said. "Top of the head hair length is also judged at this time, not allowed to surpass the eyebrows in the front or shirt collar in back. If an offending grappler doesn't wish to cut their hair, they can cover it with a silk cap that tucks into wrestling headgear. Wrestlers are then handed a weigh-in card and directed to someone who checks facial hair. If someone's got some real bristly hair, they could use that to scrape on the skin of somebody else," Matozzi said. "Anytime your skin is opened up, that exposes somebody to the potential of catching something like ringworm or impetigo. There's a workaround for that as well. There's another station," Matozzi said, "where there's a guy with shaving cream and razors. One more weigh-in rounds out the pre-wrestling checklist, and then from there, it's good luck on the mats," Matozzi said. It almost takes longer to discuss the complete array of requirements athletes must be checked for than it does for Matozzi and his co-workers to execute the process surrounding them. Matozzi credits his staff for making life easy ahead of the biggest tournament of the high school season. "I kind of inherited the process from George Dikey and a gentleman he had worked with for years. They had pretty much fine-tuned it," Matozzi said. "We have not only the process down, but we have so many guys that volunteer to help with do this, we couldn't do it without them." And a second article on the tournament from page one is written by Bob Osmussen. "CU and wrestling is a long, happy marriage," the headline. Jerome and Tony Prater made the 105-mile drive from Vandalia to State Farm Center on Thursday morning. The Praters sat in the front row of an upper section of the renovated building. Last time Jerome was here many, many years ago, it was called Assembly Hall and didn't have nearly as many bells and whistles. "I remember everything being totally different," Jerome Prater said. I like the facility a lot. The seating is very nice compared to the bleachers, Tony Prater said. The Praters made the trip along with daughters Stormy and grandson Silas to see their son Vandalia 120 pounder Cutter Prater. The Praters are discovering what the rest of us already know. The State Wrestling and Champaign-Urbana are MFEO, made for each other. The event has a long, successful history in CU. The meet has been at Assembly Hall State Farm Center starting in 1967 and every year since 1973. That's a lot of takedowns and escapes, and the relationship is far from over. Earlier in the month, the IHSA tacked on another 5 years to the deal. While the basketball tournament has bounced from CU to Peoria and football takes turns between Champaign and DeKalb, the individual wrestling and championship has remained a constant. The dedicated coaches, parents, athletes, and fans across the state know the best way to the UI campus. Once they are here, they fill local hotels and restaurants. They spend cash at grocery stores and gas stations, but it's more than a business transaction. It's an introduction to the community for people from every corner of Illinois. Who knows how many student athletes came for the wrestling and decided to return for college or to see a basketball game or concert. Mark Johnson first checked out the state meet during his prep days at Rock Island Alleman. His senior year was 1973, the year the meet came back to the Assembly Hall after a year in Normal. It can be intimidating as a high school kid in the first time, the former Illinois coach said. Nobody can get down on the floor. They make it a mystique. During his coaching career, Johnson figures he went to 20 different state meets. He ranks the Illinois version near the top. To me, it's just the best. Johnson said CU is the perfect fit for the state wrestling meet. He sees no reason ever to consider moving it away from CU. If it's not broke, you don't fix it, he said. This is working so well. It's well attended. The city opens up its arms. Having met in CU is an advantage for the Illinois program. Having the meet, rather, in CU is an advantage for Illinois program. Kids come down here that do well, and they have a good feeling about Champaign, Johnson said. You capitalize on that. It didn't always help Illinois. As an athlete, future Olympian Johnson was highly recruited. I didn't think about going to Illinois at the time, said Johnson, who started at Michigan. Once he became coach at Illinois, Johnson made landing the state's athletes a priority. My goal was to recruit the best kids out of Illinois, Johnson said. My third year, we had two NCAA champions, both from the state of Illinois. It sells the program when that stuff happens. And from the sports section on Section C of the Friday News Gazette is another wrestling story from Unity. The Rockets duo starts off well at the state meet. Cade Scott was the second best 182-pound wrestler in Class 1A last season, nearly unbeatable. Unity's then junior lost just four matches, including an 8-4 decision in his state championship match. The opponent in that defeat was Clinton junior Micah Downs, Scott's off-season training partner. So what would happen when Downs transferred to Unity before each athlete's senior year? Would Scott and Downs flip a coin to decide who got to vie for state title at 182 in 2020 and who had to shift their focus to a new weight class? Not quite. My body fat wouldn't let me go down, Scott said. I had to move up a weight class because that's more my natural weight, and I wouldn't be sick at that weight class. Scott Downs and some of their Rocket pals are feeling anything but under the weather after Thursday's state preliminaries and the quarterfinals at State Farm Center. The 195-pounder Scott and the 182-pounder Downs each finished 2-0 to qualify for Friday's semifinals, joined by teammates Tavis Hosley at 113 and Pate Easton at 160. From Unity's initial pool of nine state qualifiers, this quartet continues the march to earn the Rockets' first podium-topping finish since Juan Molina in 1991. That'd be amazing for us as a team, Scott said after victories over Beardstown's Owen O'Hara 7-1 decision in the first round and Harvard's Nathan Rosas 3-0 decision in the quarterfinals, especially showing how far we've grown since last year. The previous campaign had coach Logan Patton's team displaying 6 state qualifiers and leaving State Farm Center with runners-up efforts from Halsley at 106 and Scott at 182. Unity now is in a position to accomplish much more. Downs is part of the reason, although his road to this point hasn't been smooth. He started his final prep stint battling mononucleosis. Not long after recovering, Downs suffered a dislocated jaw that left him with wires in his mouth until just before the regional meet earlier this month. There was a little bit there that I thought I was going to have to wrestle with that, which is kind of scary, Downs said. My cardio was really limited with that. I couldn't breathe at all. I just pushed at it as hard as I could and hoped for the best, and I got the best, I guess. Downs' last day of state opened with a drawdown 9-7 decision over Nazareth Academy's Robert Gurley. The bout featured both a clock malfunction and Downs needing to vomit mid-match. Luckily for Downs, he doesn't believe his jaw is at fault. He showed that later Thursday by pinning Richmond Burton's Dalton Wood in the quarterfinals. It hurt my whole head just in general. But nothing serious, Downs said. I just think I drank too much. Got to prepare myself a better way. Downs gets to do so alongside Scott, no longer limited to training out of season now that they're within the same program. Me and him push each other constantly in the room, Scott said, trying to make each other better for state and years to come when it comes to college. Post-high school concerns can wait, of course. The current matter at hand for Scott, Downs, Hosley, and Easton is coming out ahead in their Friday night semifinal matches. Downs will duel Altoff Catholic's Joe Brownigal, the bracket's top seed and last year's sixth-place wrestler at 1A-170. Scott draws a more familiar foe in Prairie Central's Brandon Hoselton, the two-time 1A-195 state champion, who currently is 55-0 on the season. Should both Rockets both succeed, there is no need to worry about one guy beating the other in a final showdown. We all have the same goal last year. We all have the same goal this year, Downs said. We're all appreciative and grateful for the team we have. Here's a story from page 1 from the County Board of Review, headlined, OSF Lawyer, A Good Time to Pause and Reflect. A lawyer for OSF Healthcare told the Champaign County Board of Review, now is a good time for the board to pause and reflect now that there has been 2 significant circuit court rulings on charitable tax exemptions for Urbana hospitals. Ultimately, this is an issue for the Department of Revenue, says Michael Genty, one of 2 attorneys speaking on behalf of OSF at a Board of Review's hearing Thursday to consider the exempt status of 54 OSF-owned properties, among them the OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center campus in Urbana for the 2019 tax year. Nearly all of the OSF properties in Champaign County are in Urbana, although there are 4 in Champaign. 2 of them at 301 and 307 North Wright Street, according to county records. As was the case at February 11th Board of Review hearing to consider the tax-exempt status of Carl Health Systems properties for 2019, the board didn't make any determination on OSF properties Thursday and is expected to take some weeks to consider the evidence. There have been 2 recent Champaign County Circuit Court rulings concerning the property tax exemptions for Carl and OSF hospitals. Earlier this month, Judge Randy Rosenbaum ruled Carl was entitled to partial exemption on 4 Urbana property tax years, 2005 to 2011. Last fall, Judge Jason Bohm ordered the Board of Review to correct its assessments on OSF hospital properties and the county treasurer to correct the more than $1.4 million tax bill that had resulted from the assessment. In the OSF case, Bohm said the Board of Review was free to disagree with the State Department of Revenue's determination of exemptions for OSF properties, but it wasn't free to ignore it. Champaign County has challenged the Department of Revenue's exemption determinations for 2018 on OSF Heart of Mary properties, and that is still pending at the agency. Fred Grossner, the attorney for Champaign and Urbana and Cunningham Township, reminded the Board of Review Thursday that each tax year must be considered independently. "We're here for 2019," he said. Grosser also said OSF Heart of Mary doesn't qualify for a charitable exemption based on the level of charity care, less than 1%, that is made available for 8 months of 2018, the most recent data for which he had, That included charity care of 1/3% of net patient revenue and about 0.75% based on the number of patients, he said. Genty said OSF doesn't want to be involved in a long litigation over exemptions with Champaign County. He also said OSF is seeking only what is entitled to under state law. "We want to work with you and serve the community," he said. And also from page one, out of the Capital News, Illinois, the headline is "Pritzker looking to build support for increase in higher ed funds." One day after delivering his budget proposal to the General Assembly in Springfield, Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker was in Chicago on Thursday rounding up support for his proposed increases in higher education funding. Speaking at the University of Illinois at Chicago, Pritzker highlighted his proposal of a 5% increase in general operating funds for the state colleges and universities, along with a $27 million infusion into the financially troubled College Illinois Prepaid Tuition Program, a $50 million increase in funding for the Monetary Awards Program, or MAP grants for lower-income students, and $2.5 million to defray the advanced placement testing fees for lower-income high school students. "It puts college students front and center, and it builds on the historic investments and improvements that we've made to strengthen our higher education system," Pritzker said. But his speech wasn't just about gathering support for his budget plan. It was also a pitch for support of a constitutional amendment to overhaul the state's income tax system, because without that, most of those funding increases are unlikely to happen. "Some of this funding must be held in reserve until we know the fate of the constitutional amendment. That would change our tax structure to treat working families more fairly," Pritzker said. The proposed state constitutional amendment, on which voters will decide in November general election, would do away with the current flat tax of 4.95% and give lawmakers authority to adopt what's called a graduated structure that levies higher tax rates on higher levels of income. Lawmakers have already passed a bill, which Pritzker signed last year, setting out what those rates would be starting in January 1, 2021, if the amendment is approved. Most tax filers would pay the same or slightly lower rates, while upper-income filers, individuals with incomes over $250,000 a year, would pay higher rates. State revenue officials estimate that tax would generate about $3.6 billion a year in new revenue, including about $1.4 billion for the final 6 months of the next fiscal year, January through June 2021. Pritzker said the proposed increase in operating funds would help hold down tuition rates, while the increase in funding for MAP grants and the College Illinois program would help make college more affordable for working families. Speaking at UIC on Thursday, Pritzker made a special pitch for College Illinois, a program launched in 1993 that allowed families to sign contracts and prepay tuition for their children and grandchildren. It was predicated on the idea that their money would be invested in earnings on their investments would outpace future tuition increases. Unfortunately, the program's advocates didn't forecast that tuition increases would outstrip market returns, and 2 decades later, we find ourselves in a place where the program and its promises will be insolvent in the next 6 years, Pritzker said. College Illinois stopped signing new contracts in 2017, according to the most recent financial report. The program has an unfunded liability of $317 million. Republican lawmakers who oppose that graduated tax plan have also harshly critical of that strategy, arguing Pritzker should have submitted a budget based on current law, not on hypothetical revenues that voters haven't yet approved. Here's an article from Section A, page 6, from the Champaign County Drug Court. Its headline is, Judge Gets Certification Ahead of Retirement. Champaign County Judge Jeff Ford got out his to-do list and put a big checkmark on it this week, just 5 days ahead of his last day on the bench. Giddy with delight, Ford had received a copy of a letter from the Administrative Office of the Illinois Courts sent to his boss, Chief Judge Carl Koritz, saying that Champaign County's drug court has been certified for 3 years. It means our policies and procedures, the documents we use, all comply with state standards. The certification process is meant to show we're taking it seriously, following evidence-based practices, making sure everybody gets the education they need in this court because it's different than any other type of court. Drug courts exist to help people convicted of crimes fueled by their drug addiction get clean and sober, remain drug and crime-free in the process, and hopefully return to being productive citizens in their community. We're doing it right, said Ford, who's presided over the problem-solving court since its inception in 1999. It was just one of the things I wanted to get done before I retired. Ford, 68, made his plans public a month ago. His last day on the job will be after drug court on March 25th. The certification is the first for Champaign County's drug court, which has served as a model for others throughout the state. Ford said there are others that have been around longer, but Champaign County's is one of the older drug courts. While drug courts have been around a while, the certification process is relatively new. It was started 3 years ago that AOIC began the process, said Ford, who helped other counties get their drug courts certified. It involves a review by a 3-member panel of judges who look at the court's policies and procedures and the participants' handbook, both on paper and in action, to make sure they are all in line with standards set by the Illinois Supreme Court. Ford estimated there are about 68 drug courts in Illinois and more than 100 mental health and veterans courts. Ford has already persuaded presiding Judge Tom DeFontis to have Judge Randy Rosenbaum be his successor in drug court. It should be an easy transition for Rosenbaum, who has filled in as the drug court judge while Ford took care of medical issues. Additionally, when Rosenbaum was Champaign County Public Defender prior to his 2016 appointment to the bench, he served as his office's representative in drug court. He worked in the public defender's office initially as first assistant, then as public defender for 20 years prior to becoming a judge. If you look at the qualifications in the standards, he meets them all, said Ford, who helped write the qualifications for a drug court judge. He knows the ethics, confidentiality, criminal law, substance abuse. He has had the education and experience in all these areas, Ford said. And now from page B2, Crime Update, written by Mary Shank, from the local and state pages. First article, teen admits having gun in coat he just shoplifted. A Champaign teen who admitted he had a loaded gun on him after stealing coats from a Champaign department store will be sentenced next month. The 16-year-old male pleaded guilty Thursday before Judge Heidi Ladd to aggravated unlawful use of weapons for having a 9mm handgun with a round in the chamber in the pocket of a coat he was wearing that he had just stolen from Macy's at Marketplace Mall. Assistant State's Attorney Alex Boyd said the youth was one of three young men involved in stealing coats from the store on November 2nd. Champaign police found him in the parking lot carrying a $375 jacket still on the hanger, in addition to the one with tags on it that he was wearing. In return for the teen's guilty plea, Boyd agreed to dismiss another charge of unlawful use of weapons stemming from the teen's arrest January 26th. On that day, he was one of three male teens arrested at a motel not far from Marketplace, where shots had been fired earlier at several parked cars. The youth was never charged with shooting at vehicles at Marketplace on January 25th, but was charged with possession of two guns that police found in a minivan that he was getting in at the motel on the morning of January 26th. Ladd ordered that the teen remain in detention until his March 19th sentencing. His attorney, Assistant Public Defender Ramona Sullivan, asked that he be released until then. Boyd objected. Ladd noted that she had allowed the youth to be released in November after he was charged in connection with the gun in the shoplifted coat, but he was then arrested for another gun offense in January. And in another article, headlined, U of I student charged over 2 pounds of pot. A university student who allegedly had about 2 pounds of cannabis intended for sale in his home has been charged with a Class 2. Champaign County Street Crimes Task Force Sergeant Dave Griffith said Ahmad Shahada, 20, who listed an address in the 400 block of South 5th Street, Champaign, was allegedly receiving cannabis via the mail from California and reselling it in Champaign County. The task force had been investigating him for a couple of months, Griffith said. On Wednesday morning, police conducted a court-authorized search of his apartment. Shahada was present with three roommates. Officers found about 900 grams of cannabis in his bedroom and more than $1,750 in cash, including $40 that had earlier given an informant to use to buy cannabis from Shahada. A roommate of Shahada's had a smaller amount of cannabis that was still more than the 30 grams the law permits adult users to have, Griffith said. Despite the legalization of cannabis for recreational use earlier this year, Griffith said large amounts of cannabis which remain illegal and significant amounts of cash put people nearby in jeopardy. The street value of 2 pounds of cannabis is about $9,080, Griffith said. That amount of drugs is enticing. You have something somebody else wants and you put yourself at great risk, he said. If convicted of possession with intent to deliver cannabis, Shahada faces penalties ranging from probation to 3 to 7 years in prison. His roommate was charged with a less serious Class 3 felony for possessing between 30 and 500 grams of cannabis intended for sale. And finally, a Champaign man gets 5.5 years for gun. Champaign man, who had admitted having a gun when he was not allowed to, is headed to prison for 5.5 years. Willie Berry, 33, who listed at an address in the 300 block of South County Fair Drive, pleaded guilty Thursday before Judge Tom DeFantis to unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon admitting he had a gun on November 15th. Having been convicted in 2004 of involuntary manslaughter, Berry is not allowed to possess a firearm. Assistant State's Attorney Tony Lozar said that evening Berry was at the office at 302 South Country Fair Drive in Champaign and was seen by a patron displaying a gun while intoxicated. Berry was getting into an Uber ride about 10:40 p.m. when police arrived. An officer found the gun in the car and Berry admitted it was his, Lozar said. Lozar said Berry had other convictions for theft, possession with intent to deliver cannabis, burglary, and resisting a peace officer. DeFantis allowed Berry to remain free until March 18th. This has been Rita Schulte with Part 1 of the News Gazette for Friday, February 21st, 2020. We'll return with the second half in just a few moments.